Hello, Brian. How you doing?
I'm well. Yourself?
I'm very well, thanks.
I presume after four shows you're over jet lag and settle down here?
Just about. You know, I came about a week earlier to do some telly and radio and so on, and I thought I was with a jet lag, but it's a funny thing. It kind of has a sneaky way of slapping you on the head just when you least expect it. The shows have been amazing, and I'm very happy, and I feel very, you know, we're into the kind of stride now, the tour, so I'm excited about it.
Excellent. Now, you were born in Belfast, up in the Falls Road area.
I was indeed. I was actually born on the Armour Road in 66, but we moved to the Falls before I turned one. But, I mean, we're talking about, you know, somewhere that's like half a mile away from the other place. So, yeah, I grew up in West Belfast then from 66 right through to about 85 when I left to live in London. So it was a very hairy time, let me tell you that.
So, yeah, you would have been right through a lot of the troubles.
I mean, I suppose that was certainly one of the things that really stands out is the time of the hunger strikes. You know, that was just one of the most awful times in the century, really. You know,
it was at 82, I think it was.
Mm-hmm. 81, 82, around then it was all kind of, you know, concentrated. It was awful.
What's your feeling about the situation there now?
Well, it's very interesting because, of course, things are changing dramatically and in some cases overnight, but at the same time, in the same breath, because there's been such long-term unemployed, long-term kind of confidence crises, let's say, that'll take a few generations to repair on any level. And I'm talking about both communities, of course. So what I'll hopefully be able to say about it is that it'll just never go back to the days that there were before. You know, I think that hopefully it'll never return to how awful it was, and we can only move forward.
Yeah, I think if you look down in the South after the Civil War and the War of Independence, it took probably 60, 70 years for a lot of those divisions to disappear.
Indeed, exactly.
It might hopefully be a little bit quicker up in the northern part.
I mean, I remain hopeful, and one of the greatest things that has happened out of that particular war is that there are a lot of very hopeful people around.
Did you start singing as a little kid, or was you a little bit older, or what?
I was a kind of an annoying child in the sense that I used to just hum and, you know, and think of harmonies to things, and, you know, I had this kind of just natural ability, I suppose, to vocalize, let's say. But it came out very slowly because there was really no avenue for it apart from singing in chapel every week. So as I got a bit older, like 14, 15, I started to sing in chapel, and then I got solos, and it just gradually came to the fore. You know, by the time I got to 16, 17, it became possible to maybe think about doing it in a band and maybe aim towards some kind of a career, you know, but it was very much kind of groping about in the dark, really, because there was no evidence of how it could be done. In those days, music still had a great deal of mystery about it. I mean, these days, people, of course, make albums in their bedroom, burn them themselves, and, you know, sell them at the gigs, and there's no mystery anymore. But in those days, the mystery was very definitely still in place. So it took me to move to London, really, when I was 18, before things started to get more serious.
I first came across your name when you were with Van Morrison. That was for a number of years, wasn't it?
Yes, I toured with him. I ended up singing with him on the road for 6 years, and I sang on 5 of his albums. So, yeah, it was a long time. I look back on that time now, it didn't feel like 6 years. It felt like about 2.5, maybe. But because we packed so much into those 6 years, it's just extraordinary. I look back, even when I hear those recordings now, like Days Like This or, you know, A Night in San Francisco, those kind of records, I feel so proud still because it was such an incredible privilege to work with somebody like that.
Was that a great grounding for your future solo career?
Yeah, I mean, one of the greatest things he did for me literally was share his global spotlight. And I suppose then lots of people started asking, well, who is that fella that sings as Van, you know, with the high voice?
That's exactly, you know, what I did.
People really liked it, and some people were a bit kind of put out, you know, that there was somebody else on stage there. But the great thing was that it created the question, who is he? What's he doing there? Why is Van choosing him to do this stuff? And of course, as you may well know, Van wouldn't have you around for a second if he didn't respect what you were doing and didn't think you were making a contribution of some kind.
Yeah, I think every musician or singer he had was always top quality.
Oh, I mean, you just didn't last otherwise. And he literally would create a space. I remember very clearly he created a space for me, and then it was up to me to come up with something that was interesting to myself and to him, and to bring something to the picture.
Tell me, Riverdance, was that after your Van Morrison phase, straight into Riverdance?
It was just more or less straight after. In 2000, I moved from Ireland to New York City to be the lead singer in the new version of Riverdance, because, of course, as I'm sure the listeners will be thinking, well, isn't Riverdance a dance show? But they wanted to make it a wee bit more of a musical for Broadway, and Bill Whelan wrote brand new songs for me, especially for my voice. So I ended up performing 8 shows a week for 9 months, can you believe? Just the most extraordinary work schedule, but really worth it. The songs were beautiful, and again, kind of widened the audience for me too, where, you know, there'd be people who maybe knew my voice from Van, who maybe knew some of my solo records from Ireland, and then all of a sudden there was this Riverdance connection. So, you know, just when you think your life path can't get any more strange, it just opened up onto the Broadway stage. It was amazing. I'll never forget it.
The BBC has done you a big, big favour with some television shows.
Yes. I host my own show called Brian Kennedy On Song, which is about the history of Irish traditional songs, some Scottish songs. And just recently there, I was in Manhattan to film a 10-day shoot about emigration songs, and I duetted with all sorts of amazing people, Moya Brennan from Clannad and Roseanne Cash, Johnny Cash's daughter, and Liam Clancy. And it just basically looks at why, for such a tiny island, have we got so many world-renowned songs? You know, what's the reason behind it? Who wrote them? Is the geography important? Were the politics important at the time? And to just look at somebody like George M. Cohen, for example, who wrote Give My Regards to Broadway, people would understandably think that maybe he was a Jewish American man, but in fact he was an Irish man who changed the spelling of Cohen, K-E-O-G-H-A-N, to C-O-H-A-N, because he thought people wouldn't be able to pronounce it. And just things like that, you just think that was as a consequence of an Irish man moving to Manhattan, and then he wrote a song called Give My Regards to Broadway. I mean, an amazing story.
A friend of mine told me recently that the song Carrickfergus doesn't necessarily refer to Carrickfergus up near Belfast.
Well, there are two Carrickferguses, you see, and depending on which one you come from, I suppose it makes you more aligned to that one. Yeah, again, it's one of those songs that first of all, has a global, you know, take on it now, because it's like saying to children, if I start, I wish I was in Carrickfergus, it's like saying to a group of children, once upon a time, you know, and everybody just seems to listen, because it's a song that just really gets to the heart of you. But yeah, there's lots of discussion as to which Carrickfergus it's actually from. I personally don't really get into that too much, because I think songs, you know, should be allowed to just land wherever they land, and hopefully that's in your heart rather than on a piece of ground.
How long, Brian, have you been touring as a solo artist?
Really, since kind of 89-90, when the first album came out in 1990 as a solo artist, that's when I really, you know, seriously concentrated on being a solo performer.
The arrival of Fergal Flynn.
Yes.
Who is Fergal Flynn?
Fergal Flynn is a fictional character that I made up, and of course you're referring to my debut fiction novel that's just come out in Ireland a month ago, and went in at number 3 in the Irish Times bestseller list, I'm very proud to say. It's coming out here in Australia in February. It's on Hotter Headline. And it's just something that was a passion of mine that I was working on very secretly. And then gradually, of course, you know, my secret isn't a secret anymore. And it's just something I've been working on for years. And it gradually turned, you know, I couldn't call it a short story. I couldn't call it a novella. I was a bit scared to call it a novel because that's such a lofty load of pressure, you know, but inescapably so, you know. So I let a couple of friends read the manuscript, and they were very encouraging. And then Ciara Considine from Hotter Headline Ireland heard me talking about it on the radio and requested a copy of it in terms of the manuscript, so I sent it over. And of course I'm editing furiously here now, but I ended up signing a 2-book deal, and the arrival of Fergal Flynn is the first part of the story, and I'm working on a sequel now, which will be part 2 for next year. But yeah, debut novel out, and there it is, and I'm totally thrilled it exists.
Well, we look forward to its arrival in Australia in February. Sorry, and you've been to Perth before, of course. I've seen you here with the Guinness Tour, I think it was.
Yes, that's right. I came to Perth for the very first time in 97, I think it was. And even on the last tour last year, I did a little gig there before I left to go back to Ireland. So I'm glad to say that it's almost becoming an annual thing where I come back and do some gigs. So long may it last. It's a great country, and the Aussies really seem to have that appetite for live performance, which is wonderful.
So you're finishing your tour of Australia with 2 shows here in Perth on the 24th and 25th.
That's right.
Do you get any time to stay here, or are you straight off somewhere else?
As usual, you know, it's always important to remember that I'm not on holiday. I'm actually working. But, I mean, it's nice work if you can get it. I meet some great people. I stay in some amazing places. And during the day, I'll probably wander around quite a lot, and then in the nighttime, then I'll do the shows. But I've got to go straight back to Ireland to do shows, and then I have a show in Norway coming up, and then some more in America. So December is also very busy too. So I'm sure all of a sudden I'll be back in Dublin thinking, oh yes, I was just in Australia there for a month.
Brian, thank you very much. I'll let you go. I know you've got a real busy schedule.
You're fine, Brian. Thank you very much for talking to me.
And I look forward to seeing you here in Perth.
Brilliant.
Thanks.
See ya.
Bye.